that instruction. Okay, here we go. So, in my talk, I'm going to try to cover four really critical areas from both a business and a technology viewpoint. I'm going to start by talking about the new AI rules for success, something that everybody wants to know about, and which I believe we're starting to see exactly what those rules need to be. I'm going to then follow up with some of the innovative business models that are already currently being used and what that seems to indicate for the future. Then third, I'm going to turn from more of an industry and company focus to talking about the implication of this for countries, for global dynamic capabilities, but also to talk about what this means for different countries capturing and monetizing the value of artificial intelligence within their borders. And then finally, we'll talk a little bit about what's next and what's emerging. So let me just go ahead. In my first slide, in one slide, if there were only three things to remember, this slide would have it. The picture that you see there on the left is critical. What do we have there? We have many, many people, Chinese folks in this case, with smartphones. So with computers in their pockets and in their heads. And many, many, many of them using the apps on that smartphone and bringing data to the cloud. So if I had to say if there was three ingredients to success in artificial intelligence, I would put them down as the three circles on the bottom. Starting with big data. It turns out that data is generated at a furious pace by smartphones, isn't it? It generates voice, it generates text, it generates all sorts of things that are carried by the broadband. But that's not very useful unless you can actually take some insights and take some knowledge about what would be a better product or what would be an enhanced customer experience or what might be more effective using algorithms, right? Software algorithms and architecture that actually helps you take that big data, that data pool that's being created by all of these millions and billions of smartphone users, and use it for something useful. And to do that, to take all those terabytes of data and actually do something useful with it, we need enough computing power, both in a centralized form as well as a decentralized form, in which, of course, the smartphone is really exceptional. So if those are the three rules for success, you might look at it and say, but what's different? I mean, we've had software before, we've had big data, we've had computing power, and the one piece that I didn't talk about that I must talk about here is this little figure on the right-hand side. You may not know that venture capitalists in Silicon Valley call this the flywheel. Does anyone know what a flywheel is? I should ask the person back there in the back who's in manufacturing. Flywheels, this is a very ancient term of a wheel that was very heavy that created momentum as it turned. So it created a great deal of momentum. And that term is used to describe this virtuous cycle that venture capitalists in Silicon Valley talk about when they're trying to refer to network effects, multiplicative and exponential network effects, where, as in you, if you see in this diagram, you start at the top with more users. So many users who create a lot of data, you put that through smarter algorithms, you get a better product, and the cycle continues. So it's a feedback loop, a virtuous cycle that is created, that creates this incredible momentum and virtuous positive feedback loop that venture capitalists consider to be the background of all of the major successes in the past few years. Now take that flywheel, and you realize that these flywheels create what fancifully is called, in Silicon Valley terms, moats. Do people remember what moats are? Anyone who's a historian in ancient history in China knows that there were moats around Chinese castles, but also there were moats around castles in Europe. And they were used to protect the inhabitants of the castle from being attacked. So the term moats is often used for barriers to entry. So data, proprietary data a company has, can provide a moat against attack. So if you're the one who's collecting all of the data in your area, you know better what's going on with your installed customer base than somebody who doesn't have that moat. And if that continues by adding more data and continuing the flywheel, soon enough you become so far ahead that no one can catch you. So, more data. What happened with more data? And what happened in this virtuous cycle that has made artificial intelligence the accelerant for this engine? The two breakthroughs in the past 5 years have been language and vision. So if you look at this very nice diagram that came out of a BCG analysis report, artificial intelligence was in a deep winter, as they say, for a number of years. Lots of work was being done on it, but it was only action in the data world. It was as if it was submerged, like a submarine, doing something that nobody knew about. But meanwhile, structured system data, online behavior, real-time sensor data was being collected and being used. Then all of a sudden, with processing power and data, you had computer vision and human language. And all of a sudden, you could have action and decisions being made semi-autonomously in the real world. So natural language processing, speech recognition, and pattern recognition with computer vision are the two major elements in deep learning and machine learning that have shifted these new AI rules for success into something that is unstoppable. So, for example, when I was at the FinTech conference, it was Alibaba as well as several other insurance companies showed their capabilities for handling auto claims. How many of you have had to deal with an accident or an auto claim? Wow, all of these people are such good drivers. It's not being a good driver, it's being on the road that somebody else hits you, or you stop and someone else hits you. So lots of people have this problem, and I think it's something like 60%
of all claims in insurance are auto claims. Well, the people who were brave enough to raise their hands and admit that they had either gotten caught by someone else or had fallen, had just been a little less attentive as they should have been in their car, remember that you had a very, very heavy penalty to pay for it. And it wasn't even the penalty in money. It was the penalty of the amount of time it took to getting back to normal again. You had to get, at least in the States, you have to get a claim adjuster to come out. The claim adjuster goes and figures out how much your claim is worth and decides who's at fault, and then decides who's going to pay. Meanwhile, your car is maybe not operable for this entire period of time. And then you find out how much you're going to get or how much you're going to pay, and you have to find someone to do it. You bring it to the shop, and another week goes by. Meanwhile, you may have lost several hours of time plus the amount of time that you spent in finding a place to get it fixed. However, what Alibaba decided is, why don't we use all of our AI technologies? If we can have facial recognition in airports, why can't we have a do-it-yourself claim adjustment? So you have an accident, and you either take a video, or you take a photo of your car with its license plate in the right area, and you take a picture and it guides you with artificial intelligence of saying, oh, you're a little too close, you're a little too far, take another picture of this. You take these pictures, you send it. 12 seconds later, a claim comes back and says, this is the damage for your exact car, because they can tell with vehicle recognition exactly what car you have, what model it is, what parts need to be replaced, what parts need to be painted, so on and so forth. And in the same time period, they've gone and figured out who are the nearest car repair companies that are close by to you, so that who have the parts in stock that you need for your car, so that if you just press a button saying, yes, I want it to go to a certain location, they will come and pick up the car. Meanwhile, to make it really frictionless, in the 6 seconds time period, if you have WeChat or one of the Alipay payment services, the money to fix the car for the claim that you have just requested was just put into your account. So before you even got your car fixed at a fixed price, because this is what the claim adjusters and the garage have agreed to, you have the money to pay for it already. And this was just because you were able to take several pictures yourself of the car damage. And 6 seconds later, all of this was available. I found that marvelous. So I think that those are the sort of things that you can imagine integrate insurance, your identification, payment systems, maps, visual recognition, all of these things together to be able to give you a much, much improved customer experience. Meanwhile, do you think this is a good deal for the company? Well, it turns out that it's a very much a competitive differentiator, as well as the fact that for claims adjustments, this is a great idea. It turns out that that's much, much more efficient. So what I'm pointing out here that we're going to come back to is that two things happen with artificial intelligence. And too often, people think only about the second. The second one is efficiencies. Yes, the Chinese photo estimating artificial intelligence handles 12 claims in 6 seconds. That's fast, that's efficient. But that's only half of the story. The real story is the one about how the customer benefits from having all of that data and all of that headache removed, so that they can go and do what they're best at, rather than spending time arranging for an adjuster to come to their location of business or their house or even to the accident, so that they can get their car fixed. The same thing is going on in terms of industry sort of transformation in the self-driving autonomous car area. All of us know how Uber and on-demand services like Uber have totally transformed our way of going about, transform mobility and transportation. It's so much easier, it's so much more, you have more chance of getting a car to get you somewhere within something like 8 minutes time. And the fact that all of these Uber cars or Lyft cars are on the streets means that there are lots of things that can be done, such as package delivery, such as Uber Eats or food delivery service, all of those things. Now, of course, the next step that many companies are competing to lead the way in is self-driving autonomous cars. So on the left-hand side, you know the very well-known example of Google's car. Look No Driver. Here we have a real emphasis that has been in the newspapers about, look at all the cool technologies that we put together to make a car self-driving. We have a video camera that figures out where there are stop signs and when there's turns that have to be made. We have this special LiDAR laser that allows us to create a 3D map of surroundings that was created by the people who now are Waymo. We have a radar, and we have a position estimator. So all of those things are interesting hardware sort of and software breakthroughs and technology. And they have shown that they can have this car on the road. I think what I want to point out as a business person, that when I look at some of the self-driving car kind of rankings, where they will look at, oh, this car, this Google is ahead, or Tesla's ahead, or this group is ahead because their technology is so much better, I turn instead to something like Baidu and the recent Wired article that was titled, well, how Baidu will win China's AI race and maybe the world's. Why would a US tech magazine think that Baidu might have a chance of being competitive in this marketplace? I think it's because Baidu isn't taking this as I'm going to create the best self-driving car. They're saying that's going to happen one way or the other. Baidu is seeing it as a platform and an ecosystem for many, many different things, so that they're going to try and share their software, just like Microsoft or Google with Android, to be a platform for many, many different kinds of AI that might be connected with cars, mobility, transportation, logistics, any of those things. So indeed, they also have the advantage of a lot of support in that from all of the from other companies as well as the government. And what they're doing is saying, well, algorithms and artificial intelligence algorithms are going to be completely open. The person or the group that's going to win is the one who creates the strongest ecosystem that integrates all of the pieces on the platform, like WeChat. I just have to mention, just because it's really fun, Many people think that, you know, one of the things that really differentiates human beings from artificial intelligence is human beings' creativity. And that's really quite true. On the other hand, the advantage of self-driving cars and of Go players, AlphaGo, and of AI-generated development tools is that they also don't bias their data with pre-existing notions or intuitions. So, for example, this AI-generated Formula One car that was done in partnership with some of the top Formula One drivers in the world. So this was a partnership between NVIDIA and I think it was a car company plus Formula One drivers. One of the things they discovered, first of all, does this look like any car that you would imagine in Formula One? It wasn't. What happened was the car, the program was trained on data, but then told, find the best solution for going fast and going speedy and winning a Formula One race. Well, it turns out that even though we know that, and human designers know that, in Formula One races, you have turns in one direction more often than the other. So our concept of a beautiful car that looks symmetric actually isn't the most effective car. It turns out that certain variations in the way the car is built that are asymmetric might actually come out to a better outcome for speed. But the computer, not actually biased by previous experience or by feelings of aesthetics, created a very effective design that probably would not be one that a car designer would do. Some of the things that computers can do are things like pattern recognition. These are all interesting areas where, in some ways, you know, if your child, as many people have had, a baby has a special rash or seems to have a fever, do you go to the emergency room? Do you go to the doctor? Well, artificial intelligence on a phone in the future might be able to take a picture of the ear infection, take a picture of the rash, immediately give you back information about, yes, rush to the hospital, or no, you're probably using the wrong detergent. These are the sort of things that, you know, will become commonplace. So if I were to talk about what is the really critical step that needs to happen in artificial intelligence and the business model is, by the way, for those of you who are not familiar with this picture, this is a business model canvas. I've taught entrepreneurship and strategy for many, many years, and it turns out that our new focus is not to put a very long and lengthy business plan together. Now the idea is to put everything on one page, a business model that says, who are your customers? What's your value proposition? How do you do things? Where are you going to get your revenues? Where are you going to get your costs? And show, in some ways, with arrows, the interaction between each of the boxes in the business model canvas, which in some ways was a little bit of a flaw in the business plan. A business plan, if you remember, tends to be a written document with sections, and as such, it's very sequential. You go from the summary to the page on market, you go from the market page to something else. You don't see the dynamics or the interactions between each of the boxes. Well, here, you try to get your business plan in a sentence, you try to put all of these different pieces together, and what's more is, you do it as hypotheses. Everything you put down there is not the plan of what you are going to do. It's the plan of what you think is the successful plan for your business. And that is only a hypothesis, because until that reaches a customer, you really don't know. So the idea of the new form of business model canvas is kind of hacking growth. The growth hacking is to start with no product, only a minimum viable product or prototype. So for an app, you can easily make a prototype of an app that's like a PowerPoint slide, right? That you just show the different screens from one to the other and how they progress from one to the other. But with that on your phone, you can probably get a very good reaction from anyone who you send it to, who, just like downloading a new app, turns it on, tries it out, and sees whether they like it or not. So part of what's going on and why that circle is there is that we have all of the tools to get more users involved in the development design cycle so that you have much, much more data and much more experimentation even before you start to code, even before you start to think about making the product. And this is true even for, what is it? Even for physical products, right? Because part of what we can do now is create apps and create augmented reality and virtual reality products and 3D printed ones that give us a very good idea of what the product is going to look like and lets a user actually play with it and see what their visceral reaction, an emotional reaction to it is, before you even have to code or do something else. So we are in a world where we have enough tools to do this kind of flywheel, where positive feedback, trial and error, fast experimentation, immediately. Within, as in my recent class, some of you are here, we had some wonderful experience doing mobile app prototyping in 2 hours' time, right? So this is all possible now, and a way to get feedback and to get more users giving you data to create smarter algorithms, better products. So to talk about this, I really think it's important to think of this in the context of games. We often think, it's funny, many of us, business is often considered to be a very interesting game. But it's a game that's very different than Go. It's a game that's very different than chess, the ones where we know of the AI player, actually the machine, is competing against the human. In real worlds, and in the real world of business, we have three kinds of games. We have positive sum games, where economic, financial, or social rewards are created. We have zero-sum games, which is where most industries in the past have been, where you had an industry and the total reward went to either a winner or a loser, or market share was divided into only a pie that could be split into market share. There were some companies that had market share and other companies that lost market share, but the total pie stayed the same size. And we have negative sum games. Games in which economic, financial, or social rewards are destroyed as a result of playing the game. So typically, an example of that is things like wars against countries, where things are destroyed rather than improved or created. So in the past, innovation was seen as being disruption. So when Skype came onto the scene, The Economist front page said, the internet is killing the phone business, because it was seen as being a zero-sum game. All of the business that Skype was taking was going to be taken away from the phone companies and telecom companies, so that you got disrupted and disrupting, winners and losers. However, we saw something very different happen with the crowdsourced innovation that was made available with the iPhone. The iPhone platform created the app economy, so that this one platform, along with Android, could actually create billions of dollars in apps and distribute them to developers and to companies all around the world in increasing mobile commerce. So this is a positive sum game. As a result, I think that AI is also going to be an enormous positive sum game. I think that because it is going to actually enable so many new products and enhancements, create so many cross-network effects. And it's going to allow not only developers, but folks like yourself and myself to become co-creators of a better environment. Because just by doing what we do, by clicking on an ad, or clicking to purchase something, or to use our WeChat to transfer money, all of those clicks and those transfers that are happening in the transactions that are happening in the mobile world and that are being captured by the cloud are actually going into this flywheel to increase the amount of data and make smarter algorithms and better AI, so that better products can be created that fit more closely our very individual and very personalized needs and products and services, so that product development won't be just a guessing game. You won't need a Steve Jobs who has this amazing vision to be able to create a company that can enhance a product. You'll have crowdsourcing, but crowdsourcing in the sense of just going about doing your everyday life and talking on the phone or talking or being in a different place, your actions will all contribute to better products to serve you, enhanced products and services. So a recent PricewaterhouseCoopers report concluded that artificial intelligence would add $16 trillion to the global economy in better products, service, and efficiency. They did this math in a very, very reasonable way. They used a computational equilibrium model, which is used in econometrics, to look at what the GDP of the world would be by adding up all of the GDP and GDP growth factors for each country, each of the major countries. And then they added in the extra impetus in growth that would come from increased productivity of about 50% and enhanced products and services of about 50%, and came up with these numbers. So the global GDP is the maroon line. That's about what it is estimated to be. Kind of flat, right? Just maybe 1 or 2% a year. However, if you add to that personalization for all of those wonderful services and products that you're going to want that have been made available by your own data, that will be adding a certain percentage of growth. And then the time saved and the quality will be an additional amount. So you have a number of gains, 50% efficiency and 50% products and services. Now, one of the things that they mentioned, and I think that it's well worth reading this report and why it got so much attention in the World Economic Forum, is that, of course, you ask, what countries, if you did this math and you did this model and you actually modeled all the different countries, which countries are going to get or capture the value of artificial intelligence, the $16 trillion? And the huge surprise was when they put in all of the factors, about $8 trillion of that by 2030 would go to China. So nearly half of the increase that AI will return will go to China. Why is that? If you think about it, part of it is because of the population, right? There are many more people to buy these products and services. The other thing is, if you think about the data in our flywheel, the data that's being gathered by WeChat, Alibaba, and Baidu, these are all things that are moats that are being created for the Chinese consumer. That's where the data is coming from. They're using their WeChat, their phones, and the data is going to be used for their benefit. The other thing, I think, and the other reason for this $7 trillion going to China is that there's very much a thinking of companies in China and the government that has made the infrastructure available to take advantage of this. When we started, if you think of it, nobody could use their smartphones in the same way if there wasn't broadband access, if there weren't two times the population of the US in China using smartphones. They couldn't be able to do this if they didn't have a very large population of folks who used payments and who used all of these apps already on their mobile phone. So in China, we see that there's really almost a perfect storm for innovation. And sorry, I don't have the reference on here. It was a very good slide deck on SlideShare that mentioned the mass market in China is Chinese consumers because they're early adopters. They like trying out mobile gadgets. They have 700 million mobile internet users. They have a huge diversity from super rich consumers to third world mass market. You have a huge market size and diversity. Who? Baidu and Alibaba and Tencent are spending as much money on AI and on technology as the large technology firms in the US and in Europe. And Chinese consumers are relatively forgiving of mistakes, so they're willing to be beta testers, accelerating innovation. So Andrew Ng, who's well known as the former chief scientist of Baidu and Google Brain, says, you know, we really are at an inflection point. He has a hard time thinking of any industry that cannot be transformed with artificial intelligence. Some of the things that are already being done, as you know, in your airports and in your train stations, facial recognition, part of what China has going for it is that it's actually using this in the real world. It's a huge centralized database. We have AI being used to detect cancer in a Beijing-based image recognition. Why is this? Partly, we have some of these things happening amazingly fast in China because there's a huge vacuum. I mean, why is it so? And it's, that means it's an opportunity or a greenfield. Why is there so much effort in insurance? Why is there so much effort in banking? Because there are so many unbanked people, so many small businesses and farmers who can't get loans because there are only large state banks. There aren't that many hospitals. There's a real need for doctors. So AI fits and immediately can be used to address a huge unmet need. One of the cases I really like are that agriculture. I mean, for example, in China, you have a smaller and smaller arable land that needs to feed a larger and larger urban population. Well, AI will certainly be used in agriculture. And not only could you use satellite imaging, you know, monitoring crop soil health, but then you could also use robots in the fields as well as predictive analytics so that you know exactly when to water or what kind of planting you should be doing, as well as being able to use drones to see whether plants are doing well or not. I think that the one other case I heard of that hasn't been used in China yet, but is now being used for rural farmers in other countries, in developing countries, is insurance for crops. What if you put all of this and made this agricultural AI part of a fintech company that gave you insurance so that in case your crop didn't do as well as it should have, you're covered? And so this is going to be very important for other countries where farmers have smaller land plots, and if they have a bad year, they might be wiped out. So instead, they can get all of these things plus insurance to cover the risk of any loans for better equipment and better seeds. We have three top AI labs. Some Tencent is a little bit behind, but it's making up lost ground by establishing AI labs and poaching a number of big data folks, as well as partnering with AI university labs. So the idea is that part of the way to get more data is to share data, to get data from cities for smart cities, and do an exchange where if you have the data necessary from a city, they get the application for free to better improve their city services, but you get to use the data to create products that might be better suited for the folks in that particular location. So it's very closely tied to smart cities and to government, because there's a new kind of public-private partnership that's possible in this case. So I want to just end and leave some time for some questions on what's next. And in my what's next slide, I have a little balance. I think the balance is shifting. We are at an inflection point where much of the interest and the attention was paid to AI technology. The idea, oh, who can win a Go contest? Who can win, you know, a Jeopardy contest? Who can win a chess contest? And now we're turning to the real reason for artificial intelligence is how can we use the flywheel? How can we use the data that is being collected by every time we use our phone to make better products, to apply that artificial intelligence and those algorithms and that training and our new machine learning in facial recognition and voice recognition for people, to bring them better lives, to bring them better experiences, and to bring a positive sum world of increased GDP and experience to a larger portion of the world, as well as individuals in China, US, and the AI leaders in innovation. Thank you.